हरि ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 20. The Manusmriti and other smritis are authoritative because they have emanated from the Vedas, right? Because they're called I don't remember. There's a name for it. Just means that they're coming from the Vedas.
Right?
No, that's spoken by the Lord. Means that they're eternal. This means all these them and means all these smritis. There's a name for them. The eternality of the Vedas in this sutra is proved by the Vedas themselves. That is the difference between the current sutra and Vedanta Sutra 1329. Purvapaksha. So then the argument against this. In the Purushrukta Rigveda 10.7.90.10 are the words, Tasmat yagyat sarvahutaha richas samani jagire chandagamsi jagire tasmat yajus tasmad ajayata. From the sacrifice, all fire sacrifices, the Rigveda and Samaveda were born. From it, the Vedic hymns were born. From it, the Yajurveda was born. This passage proves that the Vedas were born, and because they were born, just must also perish in the end. For this reason, the Vedas are not eternal. Right? So now, if on this, is their argument is that the Vedas are not eternal, then there comes another problem along with it. The writing of their own acharya is also not eternal. But at least then, if it's not eternal and we're not eternal, then you can say it is equal. You know, it's just like saying in the modern context that, the Western world is all the countries there, they're just a contemporary modern thing. But also India is. It's not Vedic, it's just India. It's just the people that live there and then they have India. So if India is just India and the West is just the West, then they're both just countries. And so what does it matter if it's this country or that country? You have to use some country, some etiquette, some, does that make sense? So that's the argument. Rather than no, but India is using the remnants from the Vedic culture. So even though it's remnants, it's still better than total speculation that you'll get outside of it. Does that make sense? So, in other words, it's the same style of argument. Just reduce the... It means we're saying the Veda is eternal and it's established. Then these other smritis are there. They're connected to the Veda. And because of that, then they have their position. Then we're saying here that the yoga smritis or Sharikya smritis, their smritis are written by their acharya. So then they may have that temporary nature, but since the Veda is also temporary, then we're on an equal level. Right? They can't bring themselves up. They just try to bring the Veda down. Right? You know, it's a standard thing. You find a fault in someone else, then you feel you've elevated yourself. All it is you brought the other person down. And now you feel better. But you brought them down, now if you're equal, you're not better. It's just... But because you found the fault, you feel you're better. It's a standard, just mentality. Yes?
Besides that, it looks like this argument is taken out of context.
You always have to take it out of context. Okay. Because the thing comes up is that if it's not taken out of context, how can they be speaking something that's not the absolute truth? So that means any material argument or perspective is always out of context. But in it being out of context, they try to make it as logical and that as possible. They'll keep talking until they find something that catches people's attention. And once they found those, then they always talk. Like if I say a green bird goes into a green tree, and so now it's all green, it's all one. It catches people's attention. They go, yeah, yeah. Because they say, it's all green, that's the oneness. Yeah, it's all green, but there's a green tree and a green parrot. There's two different things. You know what I'm saying? So they say the one, and then they switch it. So that's what they always have to do, is they always have to switch it into something else. So here it's just like we're using Krishna's energies in his service. They're using Krishna's energies in their service. So it's not the mechanics of it. It's what it's actually for. So many times, it's not that we can't use or appreciate the mechanics that are used by these different schools of thought. I mean, we even see as modern materialists, sometimes they say things and that, you know, like that one, Books of the Basis, you know, that thing there, that's taken, I think, from a Buddhist monk. He brought that up. But it's so exact that it's used. Now everything else that guy's, and so we may take, oh, he said that, we accept it, so we accept everything else. No, we only accept that. Everything else we don't accept. So when someone speaks something that's correct, that's accepted. But the point is that's because it's the mechanics that are correct. But their attitude, that's wrong. So that's why we don't accept that. So mechanics are common. So people are dealing with the Lord's energies, and so they're dealing with this secondary. And if they by their contemplation, by their practice, Krishna reveals nicely how to deal with it, then that itself is a element of truth. Right? But the point is it's what makes it material or spiritual is not the mechanics, but is the attitude. That's why we see you can have those dealing with the spiritual world in a materialistic way. Or those who are in the spiritual material world dealing with it in a spiritual way. Right? So we don't consider the acharyas material. They're spiritual, even though they're in the material world. And the demons in the spiritual world, we don't consider them spiritual. They're material. Why? The difference is attitude. Right? Arjuna is fighting. Karna is fighting. Similar technique. One has the material nature, one has the spiritual. Technique is the same. So that's the whole thing, is this technique and qualities are, you know, knowledge. These are overlapping principles because they're secondary. Then the attitude is what makes it spiritual and material. Does that make sense? So in here, they may have aspects that are correct. You know, certain aspects of yoga and of Shankhya that are correct. But because the attitude's wrong, then it can't be accepted on that premise. So we always have to see what's the attitude when it's being applied. We can't just look at the mechanics of correct. Well, they do the thing, because smartas do the same thing as we do in his lifestyle. They get up early, brahmahorta, take their bath, do their pujas, you know, chant their mantras, do all the different things, offer their food. You know, the same lifestyle, because it's a Vedic lifestyle. But the point is that with that same Vedic lifestyle, you can get six kinds of bogus philosophies, and then the proper philosophy of Vaishnava. And they all live the same lifestyle. That's the advantage, is they all have one lifestyle, though different philosophies. So your philosophy is what you do with religion. Right? Does that make sense? Religion is then what's given by the Lord, is how you're supposed to live. And then how you use that, for what purpose, that makes your philosophy. Right? So you have to have a philosophy, otherwise it's just sentiment. You're just following because my father did, and his father before him did, and his father before him, that kind of stuff. So it'll just be sentiment. It's pious sentiment, but it's just sentiment. And if you have philosophy without a religion, then how do you apply it? So it's just speculation. So you have to have philosophy and religion. But religion is the common point amongst everybody. Now, which emphasize, what's part one one group will emphasize over another, that'll be there. But it's all the same tools. It's just like you have a market, and it has all the elements that belong in a market and that people use in their homes. But depending upon who they are, they buy this or they buy that. Does that make sense? You know, so it's all there. It's just a matter of so the religion is all the various aspects you could use for the elevation of your human form of life. Now, why you are using it, now that defines then your philosophy and actually what result you'll get. So we have to be able to distinguish of what is correct and what's not. Because on the modern thing, we'll take it that if they're wrong, everything's wrong. So even if there's doing something that's correct, that will be thrown out along with the whole thing. And so we have to take the opposite, even though the opposite's wrong, because certain things that they're doing are correct. And so then we'll go on like that. And then because of our enthusiasm or our sentiment, right, then we will go on. But then after a while, people will notice once the sentiment dies down because the opposing element's not prominent anymore, no one really remembers, then they simply notice that it doesn't work. But, you know, it's kind of like the, what do you call it? You know, your standard argument of those who come in and take over a country and those who want them to leave, right, is those who come in and taken over, generally they take over because they're of superior administrative ability. Mm-hmm. So their point is if we go, the place will fall apart. Right? And the people who are there is better it falls apart, but it's we're making it fall apart. It's our country. It's our independence. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing, is that after a while, then people start, why is it falling? Then they have to do something about it. So they would have to do the same thing that other power that came in and administered would have to do exactly the same thing. Otherwise, because they know how to make it work. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is that, but it'll be taken that whatever they did, we'll do the opposite. You know, it's just like on the material. Material is giving me problems, so I'll do the opposite. There is no people, there is no feelings, there is no form, there is no activities, because all these things give me trouble. So we see is that these are just natural things, and I deal with it because it gives me satisfaction. I don't deal because it doesn't. Does that make sense? Yes.
Marsh, I'm not clear about yoga. Because we define it as a part of karma. Because when Rupa Goswami says jnana karmadya, then yoga is not separately. It's part of karma. But their goal seems to be is that they have two options. Some they can get moksha, and some just get artha and kama, like that.
Means they get mystic cities.
Yeah.
But up to the point of dharana, yeah, it's all karma.
Okay.
Then after that, then it could be a continuation of karma, or it could go into jnana.
Okay.
So it means if they want to merge into the Lord, then it's gone into jnana. Mm-hmm. But if they just want mystic cities or, you know, good health or whatever it is that people do these days, you know, then it's just karma. So the first six levels are karma. So that's the form of it, because the last is just meditation. So that part, but all the activity that makes yoga yoga is all karma. And the meditation, you could do that without the yoga. You know what I'm saying? It's just a mechanical way to make it happen. So those who are more functioning on the bodily platform, then it makes it easier, because then the body's doing things, so the mind naturally follows. Mm-hmm. But let's say, you know, the devotee, he just chants Hare Krishna and meditates on the Lord, so he doesn't need the yoga system as such, the mechanics, to be able to do that. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So can we say that the four schools, they are completely karma-oriented? Then one, as you mentioned here, you can go, you know, either way, and then, of course, you know, what Shankara says, it's moksha oriented.
Yes. But I mean, you see a lot of these also is that they have that moksha element to them. Mm. You know, from what I can see is that the Nyaya Vaisheshika Shankya It's not about getting a better material facility. It's about getting out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But it still doesn't mean that the thoughtfulness that went into Mimamsa is not of a better platform of philosophical presentation than the other four, lower four schools. Right? Therefore, you can defeat all these other four with karma. Just because he'll talk on every verse and he can work out, you know, whatever he feels is inconsistent in these verses. But for the purpose of karma. So, all philosophies will be this mix of karma and jnana. Because they're always trying to get rid of something and gain something. You know, because you can say it's ultimately they want to merge into the Brahman and the happiness that they'll get from there. It's not about Krishna, so it's not service, it's self-centered. So technically, you could say it is a result of their work, or a fruit of work. They have an activity they want to get, but it's within the realm of jnana. You know, or these, or others, is that within the realm of karma, they want to get rid of, you know, material difficulties in that. You know, by being pious in that, I free myself from the results of impiety.
Mm-hmm.
So these two will always be there, whatever you're doing. People want to become happy and get rid of unhappiness. So getting rid of unhappiness is jnana. Gaining happiness, that's karma. So basically, the ideal and the pessimistic, they go together. It's just which is prominent. You know, does that make sense? So it's just you label it by prominence. But they all have everything in it. Yeah. Yes.
So about the books of the basis and all that, how, if somebody's saying to us, well, like you were saying, these guys are just picking and choosing out of our philosophy, like out of the Vedic philosophy or out of Krishna conscious philosophy, what they want. So that somebody can say the same thing about us.
It means you can always say anything about everybody, but the point is that the Shastras and the Acharyas and the mood that they give, you have to see that volume of it and see how that's going.
Yeah, but
because otherwise any argument can say.
Yeah, yeah. But how can we defeat that by saying that our Acharya is the right one? Like, we know that, but how can
we? But we don't have to establish that. We're talking here is that within our society that they follow the founder and the Acharyas. So then that's what we have to do. The others, it's just a matter of presenting, taking them what they're doing and taking it up further. They want to get, they're getting what they're trying to get from that, but it won't give satisfaction to the soul. So we can show them how by taking what they're doing and keeping going into devotional service, how they'll get what they're looking for. Because what they're doing is already part of devotional service without the devotional service. In other words, they're doing elements of the mechanics of devotional service without devotional service, and then because it lacks devotional service, the gaps in between they're filling up with more non-devotional service. So all they have to do is keep the stuff that is useful in devotional service and engage in devotional service.
Because sometimes it seems like it's an argument against, like, everybody's trying to prove this is on a
but we don't have to get involved in that.
Okay.
Means we have to understand ourselves. Then when you're dealing with them, you just point out, find what's the essence of what they're doing. What are they looking for? What are they trying to gain? And then how that's gained through proper Krishna consciousness.
Mm, but sometimes when you're having a discussion with someone, like, from outside, then that's what they'll say. Oh, you know, religion's all the same. Like, this one's trying to prove
religion's all the same. Then you just turn. You can go along and say no. Intelligence means to distinguish. Means it's very easy to just say it's all the same. Just like it's easy to say, you know, all whatever they're from. Okay, all Australians are the same. You know, Crocodile Dundee is your, you know, spokesperson, and they're all a bunch of yobs, uncultured, gross, disgusting people. And so that's the way it is. You know, we're going to overlook that some people go to private schools, they know very nice, they can probably speak better English than, you know, Americans, and all that, and know much more, and they're very qualified, they're very practical, they're non-mental, but we're overlooked that because I've chosen my stereotype. So, yes, you can do that if you want. But, you know, do we want to be intelligent, or is this is just a sentimental conversation? That's all. So if you want to say, no, it's all the same, and this and that, and it's all nonsense. So if you want to just go on in sentiment, you can do that. But that's how dogs do. They see you, they bark. They don't know who you are.
But they're saying they're all the same because everyone's trying to prove their one is.
Yeah, and they're trying to do exactly the same thing. So if everyone's trying to do that, they're part of that. Not that they're standing outside and not doing that. Why are they saying that unless they're trying to do that to make their opinion? So they're all doing the same.
Except they're their own father.
That's there. That's there. That's there. Yeah, makes it easier. Okay. Okay. Uttara. So now what we would say to what they've said. No, it is not so. The word born here means manifested, not born in the ordinary sense. For this reason the scriptures say, right? In other words, it's manifest means we're able to perceive it. It's always there because it's coming from the breathing of the Lord. The Lord's always breathing, so it's always there. But only with creation, when we have a body after the secondary creation, then we're able to perceive this. Right? So then at that time, the Veda is given to Lord Brahma. So it appears that it appeared. Swayambhur Esha Bhagavan Vedo Gitas Tvaya Pura Shivadya Rishi Paryantas Smartaro Sya Nakar Karaka. The great Veda, self-born, was sung by you previously. Shiva and the sages collect and teach it. They are not its creator. The Vedas do not cease to be a source of genuine knowledge, because sometimes the results promised by it do not occur. This is so because the promised results always occur when the Vedic rituals are performed by properly qualified persons, right? So unless you're qualified, know what you're doing and what the goal is, you can't get something, right? Just like somebody who doesn't know how to do an activity, if they try to do it and it doesn't work, they can't blame the activity, right? Because they're not qualified, they don't know what they're doing. Yes?
So, this seems to be common amongst devotees also, because some of them, they get into semantics of the words, and
yes,
then it's like really tricky.
Yeah, yeah.
So how can we deal with these people? Like they say, you know, if we have bhakti within us, so what is the, you know, what is the guru does when he plants the bhakti lata bija? And then if it's manifested or unmanifested, and then people get into all kinds of things, and then...
Because they're trying to take everything to the external, that it's all about the mechanics, that I did this, therefore I got bhakti. Rather than, no, you please the Lord, therefore you got bhakti. So the point is it's a matter of, it's like trying to understand how the copper wire is making the blender work. Right, because it's the copper wire that's making the computer and all the electronics work, right? But is it the electricity that goes through the wire? You understand? So they're focusing on the wire rather than the electricity. Because the point is bhakti is independent. So it's not what the guru does. Is that the guru being pleased, then Krishna is the Adi Guru in the heart, then all the things work. So that's the whole point, is when guru's pleased, it works. So, but they want some physical thing when it's there, you know, like that famous one of our Calcutta pujari, you know, he's touching his disciple on the head and then he gets infused with spiritual potency. People love that because it's mechanical, it's external, it has nothing to do with spiritual. So they can relate to it. So what's happening here is that by too much association with the mundane, people expect a mundane method. So something that's transcendental to the mundane and to the secondary, that it's working through the secondary, but it's independent of the secondary. That's what karma is that unless you do the secondary, the primary can't work. No, the primary is independent anyway. And then if you use the secondary, you'll see it manifest. Right? Like cooking is an eternal principle. Whether anyone's cooking or not, it's still there. The laws are there. Then if someone does goes through the mechanics of cooking, then you see it manifest. But it's still eternally there. So that's the thing they want to say is, no, it's about the secondary. It's what I'm doing. Because all material philosophy has to be about the secondary, because that's what makes it material. It's leaving out the primary, which is the Lord. Or at least the Lord from the element of him as a person and devotion towards him. They may accept him that, okay, he's the controller of this, I'm not, and so then he fulfills my desires, but it's still about fulfilling our desires, not his. Right? So we're considered more pious when we're willing to fulfill our desires in line with how he wants it done. And we'll consider that religious, which it is, but it's not spiritual. Spiritual means now it's beyond what I'm going to get from it. Right?
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's beyond that. So there's a religion is there, and then when it's a theistic religion, then it's superior to an atheistic religion. But unless it's a devotional religion about pleasing the Lord, a pure devotional religion, then it doesn't actually come to its natural eternal state.
Yeah. So, yeah. But somehow the expert, they always bring you back and say, okay, that's a good argument, but...
No, but then you find where you figure out what's the core of theirs, and don't let them move from that, because every time you defeat whatever they've said, see, they're bringing it back to here, you bring them back to the other point. Just like Prabhupada did with that one, I'm not sure, was that, I think a Christian gentleman or a priest. He said, thou shalt not kill. And then he's trying to give so many ways to interpret that, and he always brings it back. No, kill means kill. And no, but you know, this and that, and so, but what about this? So he wouldn't let him. I did that once to somebody in Calcutta, I remember.
Actually, Prabhupada is very often different people.
Yeah. You just find the one point. Because speculation means you just go from point to point. Because it's not about that they want a real conclusion. They just want something that satisfies their modes of nature. Their combination of you know, attachment and envy. So you find what's the core thing. And then bring it always back to that. They get highly uncomfortable. I remember this one gentleman, because he was one, he used to always come to the temple and he used to love to argue with the devotees. You know, it's like that Dr. Patel, you know, with Prabhupada. He just loved to come and argue, you know. But Prabhupada would defeat him, and he was happy with that, but he loved the process of arguing. So I remember this gentleman was one of those. He loved to come around and just argue. So one day I caught him on this and wouldn't let it move from the point. He just at one point says, this is not, you know, why are you doing this? How are we going to have a nice conversation if you keep bringing it back to this one point? You know, you don't allow us to go off into other things and to explore and do all these different things, because he wanted to speculate. So what you do is just cut out the position to speculate. Then you'll see either the conversation ends very quickly, or then they'll start to acknowledge. So if it's devotees, hopefully they start to acknowledge them with karmis, and they just end it. Because they can't get anywhere, so why would they waste, you know, as a karmi, why would they put in, you don't throw, you know, how you say? You don't throw good speculation after bad, right? You know, so they just see that you can't get anywhere in this conversation, so they give up, they stop.
Because we've experienced that in the class, if this kind of argument goes on, even for a short while, then the energy really drops.
Oh, yeah, like anything. It's very, very draining. But technically, that's the point of that kind of conversation. Is the individuals that are there, they get their taste from that kind of, you know, that tension.
Yeah, but then the speaker is like, you know, it's...
Yeah, so then either you work on finding quicker ways to get about it, or you ignore them, or, you know, because there's so many people in the room, then you know they're there, and if you see hands go, it means peripheral vision, wherever hands go up first, take that. And then it takes a while, and then other hands, you just don't get there. You know? Like that. So you have to see, is it just to argue, then you ignore them. If it's that they just have points, but by discussing it, then they can catch the point, then much of the time is what they have to say, others are thinking also, but they don't ask the question. So as long as you can get them to a conclusion, You know, like I was saying, that one Mataji before, she'd always ask questions everyone had loved to ask, but they absolutely would not. You know, like one day I said something on behavior and dealing and something like that, how you deal with someone else. And then the lady raises her hands and points to the lady right next to her, because I guess they're friends, so they sat down together. She says, "No, but she doesn't do what you said. She did this." You know, like that. Yeah, who does that? But this lady always did it. You know? And so then, but she wasn't like political or this or that. She was just very simple and, you know,
no culture.
Yeah, no culture. That's all. And so but everybody liked the discussion because it was something they would like to know about, but they wouldn't ask the question. So you have to define it. So just because they don't understand it, but everybody else does and it's valuable, you think it is, then it's worth discussing. So you have that a lot. The person who asks the question absolutely cannot understand the answer. But by discussing it, then everybody else gets the benefit. But now if they keep bringing it up over and over and over and over again, then you have to try to, you know, somehow or another, if you can end it where there's a gap enough where they don't start again, then you call on someone else immediately. But you can't, it means if you've seen they can't be satisfied, they're just going to argue on semantics, then as soon as there's a gap, call on someone else. Or if it's the end of time, just end the class. Because it's a waste of time. Like that, you know. At least in a group. Individually, you can talk and then, you know, you can get there. But some of these things take years. Remember, we were discussing with one devotee on, you know, the jiva and how he got here and all that. And they had a certain idea. And it took 3 years. 3 years of really serious, you know, in the class, out of the class, and that. And then one day, out of the class, then he saw, oh, okay, now I get it. Like that. It took 3 years.
That's a good time.
Huh? Yeah, that's not bad. Yeah, there's other people who are still holding on to that. That's better. Wow. Impressive.
That we figured out. We just give a reference for the book and say, you read this book, this chapter, and just, you know, we don't get it.
Yeah, you just find whatever works for the individual and for that, or that group of individuals, or, you know, you just find by doing it what'll work. But it's easier to go with it than to go against it. You know, it's like Aikido. I mean, if somebody throws a punch, you don't block the punch. They're already committing energy, you know, and so if they hit something, it's solid, but if it doesn't, they're off balance. So all you have to do is take your fingers and grab the arm and push a little more and they fall over. You understand? So instead of trying to fight the point, you find what's the essential point they're trying to make, agree with that, and then take them to what it should be. But that takes patience, that takes, you know, intelligence, it takes all the things that you require to go back to Godhead, you know, so you get the practice, you know. So that's the thing. That's why it says Sukadeva Goswami becomes perfect by speaking, Sukadeva by hearing. Because in all these, whatever you're doing, you have to apply the proper character and attitude in anything. And wherever you apply it, then you advance there.
Maharaj, you speak about the qualification. So, whether it is a karma kanda action or a jnana kanda, it requires qualified people.
Yes.
Otherwise, it will not be successful.
No.
But the same thing, you know, if we have a touch of bhakti, then whether the person is qualified or unqualified, we get the results.
The bhakti will work. Whether you get the material results or not is another thing. But you will get, the bhakti will prosper. Does that make sense? Someone's not a good manager, but there's no one else to manage, so they're stepping up and trying to do it for Krishna. They will advance spiritually. Everyone will advance spiritually. It doesn't mean that the place will be managed nicely.
Not necessarily.
You understand? But everyone will be happy. Yeah. You know, I've seen temples where they're not good managers, but they're really nice mood. Everyone's very enthusiastic. And then other temples that are managed like so perfectly, and they're just like a museum. You know. And that's that's without the tour. Yeah. So the whole point is it's the devotion that makes it work. That's the advantage. Now, if we maintain our attachment to the material, then you have two processes. One, you just continue with the devotion and leave it up to Krishna, and because you have your nature and all that, when the time is appropriate, that you could deal with the results that you would like without getting distracted from Krishna consciousness, and Krishna will arrange them. Like that. Or you have to learn the skills on how to get that result that you want. But just because you get it doesn't mean you'll be satisfied. Only bhakti can satisfy.
The first option is better because second option.
The first is better. But the point is that material skills give particular results. That's what they do. So the point is, but bhakti being a higher principle, being the essence of why anything's done, if that's done nicely, people will notice that and appreciate. You know, just like you have the knowledge and skill, then above that you have the character or qualities required. Then above that you have the intent. Right? So all these things, they go up. So now, someone that has nice qualities, even if they don't do so well, you prefer them to someone who has bad qualities and who's very expert. If you want to interact. If as far as getting work done and it doesn't bother you, of course you'd want the guy who does better work. But you know what I'm saying? So you have to be able to distinguish that all these things are separate, but at the same time they all have their effect together. But you have to distinguish what's doing what. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. The Vedas, The Vedas do not cease to be a source of genuine knowledge because when sometimes the promised results do not occur, this means that the performer of the rituals was not properly qualified. Therefore, because they contradict the Vedas, the Shankya Smriti and Yoga Smriti are not genuine sources of knowledge. So you would not take them like that. So where they have given something of the Veda and it's appropriate, they don't contradict the Vedas, then that part can be accepted. If it's necessary. Point is we don't have to take anything from the atheistic Shankya because we've got Shankya given by Kapila Muni. So why would we need to take anything from there? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You know, and from Gautama, then the Nyaya, that's used by everybody. All the schools use that. Mm-hmm. But everything else of his philosophy is left. Does that make sense? And yoga, then, you know, we understand the aspects of especially the meditation and all that, you know, the eight levels, but how they'll be accomplished, that'll be accomplished by our own methods. We don't need to use the Ashtanga yoga method, but to understand that yoga is based on these eight levels, that's standard. That's just how everything works, yes.
So can we say that our yoga scripture is actually Bhagavad Gita because it explains all levels of yoga? We don't have to refer to Patanjali.
No, we don't. If there's some detail more you want, then Patanjali can be seen. But you have to be careful. Is within Patanjali, is it in accordance with the Veda or not? So that's why it's better to stick to what the Acharyas give us of these other schools. You know, it's that Prabhupada's already given and explained these things. So then we can use. And then in line with that, if we need to study some more detail, we can. But as soon as it contradicts, that's the point at which it's not useful. Because if we say, oh, but he says this and Prabhupada says that, then you're already inside the water.
Yeah.
Right there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, these smritis, Sarikya Yoga smritis, they are based on the Vedas. And finally, they find fault with the Vedas and get Vedas down to their level. So basically, I fail to understand what is the gain, you know, by doing this because...
What is the gain for them? Yeah. What is the gain for those following yoga and
criticizing Vedas because...
To being followers of the Veda, bring the Veda down to their level because then they can do whatever they want. Means the whole point is the materialistic living entity is trying to cultivate karma and jnana. Mm-hmm. And by that they think they will be happy. So then they are just more pious in that they are accepting a Vedic version. But they still are going to approach karma and jnana according to their own particular mix. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so those who just love to, you know, logical argument, then they'll go more for nyaya. You know what I'm saying? So just depending upon what your theory is, then that's what you'll use.
Okay.
But if you want to do that with only intelligence, you'll use Gotama. If you want to do that, you accept the element of the mind, then you'll use Shankya.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Right? Because if it's just a matter, it's not really part of, it's not on your life, it's just intellectually what you do while you're doing your life, then that's nyaya. But if you want to take it and add it into more of your life, then you'd use Shankya. Does that make sense? So it's just like that. So the point is it's just a matter of their particular materialistic taste.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's all. Mm-hmm. Is that, yeah. So that's the whole point, is that there's something that's just, it's just according to your taste. You know, it's just like, you know, the girl is there, she's had her nice dress and her pigtails and that, and somebody likes, and someone else's, she's got on wearing black eyeliner, black nail polish and black lipsticks, and he likes.
Mm.
And the twain don't meet. You know, does that make sense? Except maybe in Japan. But, you know, other than that, you understand? So it's just everyone has their taste. So that's how it works. That's, otherwise, how do you have 8,400,000 varieties of this taste? Bhagavatam verse reference. The Yamadutas replied, "That which is prescribed in the Vedas constitutes dharma, the religious principles, and the opposite of that is irreligion. The Vedas are directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, and are self-born. This we have heard from Yamaraj." Right? So they know about the Lord, but whether they're devotional or not is another thing. It's just about, you know, just because you know the government is there and there's authority and there's a prime minister and he runs the place and you respect him for doing that doesn't mean you have devotion towards him. Right? So that's the point when you're dealing on these universal affairs. It's not that they don't know what's going on. It just doesn't mean that it invokes devotion. Okay? Footnote 10. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur defines dharma and adharma. Dharma is what is prescribed in the Vedas. What is in the Vedas is the nature of dharma, tattva, and the rules of the Vedas are the measurement of dharma. Right? So you're explaining the nature of dharma and the rules of dharma. Right? So the nature is what we would call the tattva, the philosophy. And then the rules, that's how you measure that it is dharmic.
Can we say rules would be the religion?
You would say, but it's how you measure that it's religious is because you're following the rules. Because if someone doesn't follow the rules, how do you tell they're religious? But what the religion is, what its purpose is and all that, that's given in the tattva.
Okay.
So we see even here, they stand back and can look at it.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, someone follows these rules, that's how you know they're religious. If they don't follow the rules, how do you know they're religious? You can say, mm-hmm. Oh, it's all within the heart. Nice. But, you know, but the point is then, you know, things have to be known, have to be, you measure by that. Otherwise, how do people know? You know what I'm saying? How does the family know that the father's committed to being punished, what he does? He can say he's committed and it's all in the heart and all that. And no, but we don't see any evidence of that. You know, he doesn't go to work. He doesn't make any money. He doesn't spend any time with the family. He doesn't support them when things go wrong and all that, and just like that. So, but within his heart,
mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So that's the point, is you have to be able to measure something. And so the form of that, that's what it does. So then you have the measurement within Yoga Maya or the measurement within Mahamaya. What's the difference? Measurement's measurement. So the difference is that in Mahamaya, it's not about Krishna. In Yoga Maya, it's about Krishna. So we're measuring and seeing the religious thing, but now we've measured that, what is being performed, but then why is that being performed? That makes it then whether it's eternal religion or just material religion. Is that? Okay. Because the servants of Vishnu ask about adharma, the servants of Yama describe the nature and measurement of adharma. This also covers the question about the reasons for punishment. What is forbidden in the Vedas is adharma. Doing what is forbidden in the Vedas is the measure of adharma. Right? So if you do what's not said, that's how you measure that they're being adharmic. If they do what is said, then that's how they measure that they are being religious. Otherwise, how do you define? Because otherwise it comes back to, yes, well, you're doing this, but that's your religion, this and this, wouldn't it? No, but if you have this mentality, it's just like the other day is, you know, this person did this, so he's not a Brahmin. You know, like that. No, he is a Brahmin. He just did something wrong. So what he did wrong is wrong, but the rest of the thing, he's a Brahmin. So therefore, if you deal with him, just it's easy to say they're not a Brahmin, therefore I can deal however I want now. Right? Because a Brahmin, I have to be respectful. I don't want to be respectful, so I'll say they're not a Brahmin. So that's how it works. You know, same like we're doing here with the Yoga Sutra. Oh, they've done something wrong, so they're not a Brahmin. Then I bring them down to a lower level. Then I can find fault. It's a standard, you know, it's standard method. So the thing is that it goes back to the Veda. The Veda defines the measurement. Otherwise, what happens is we'll define the we'll take religion and give our own spin on it, and then try to say it's the same when it doesn't support the Veda. So therefore, it's not dharma; it's adharma. But due to the mode of ignorance, I'll try to present it as dharma. You know, if I'm better talking at mode of ignorance than someone else is at talking of, you know, goodness, then I may win the argument. But it doesn't make it now religion. So, yeah. The Vedas are manifested from the Lord, Swayambhu. They arise from the breathing of Vishnu on their own. Shruti says, Asya mahato bhutasya nishvasitam etad yad rigvedaha. The breathing of the Lord is the Rig Veda. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. Sardartha Darshani 6:1-40. Yeah. So does that make sense? So we have to see as we can't, we always have to see it always goes back to the Veda is what is the measurement of everything. The Veda is what defines everything. So how the Veda defines it, that's real. Not how we define it. And whatever the Veda gives as measurement, that's what's real, not how we define it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you see, in a discussion where someone's trying to present some other alternative, they're giving a different either definition, you know, tattva, or measurement. So if that's understood, then we don't get caught up in the wordage. We just step back and we just see they're defining it wrong by their own thing, or they're using the wrong measurement. And then you can point that out. And when you work on that level, they'll have nothing to say. Because material philosophies are always about the secondary. Right? And working within them as they're complete. So when you bring it back and show it's lacking in the primary, and how its secondary aspect is there just to manifest the primary, not for their own secondary purpose, there's nothing to say. That's at the point where they'll try to change the argument, and then you keep them to the point.
So, when you say about tattva, okay, the nature of dharma tattva, that is very precise. But when you speak about the rules of the Vedas, the
measurement is also very precise. It's just it covers everything. It's precise. Why would we say it's not precise?
Because every group has its own definition of what are the rules, the measurement rules.
But at the same time, do they? You know, the thing is if you look at it, do they? What's different? Okay, let's take start up north, okay? The Buddhists, okay? I mean, he's really north, you know, like Ladakh kind of. Do they accept authority?
Yes.
Do they accept gurus and scripture and senior personalities within their practice?
Yes.
Okay, let's go a little south. What about the Sikhs? Okay, what about the Muslims? You know, go a little bit farther south down to Kerala. What about the Christians? You know what I'm saying? You know, all the other general, that everybody accepts that. So that's the measurement. You know what I'm saying? Now, how they'll show that respect You know, do they come up and say namaste? Do they, you know, take off their hat and with a frill do it? Or if I think, from what I understand, if they're on dune and they spit on you because water is so valuable, so offering that water, then that's very respectful. You know, so the point is that it's just a matter of you use whatever is of value to them within that. But the principles of the measurement are the same. Now, details in, you know, how they're going to, where they're going to apply that and all those things, you have to get down into that. So that's where you'll see some difference. But what's the purpose that they're trying to obtain, perform by that measurement? And what's the definition above that? So that's where you see. So where it is correct, it's correct. And where it's wrong, it's wrong. Because it's you have dharma or adharma.
Yeah. When we say that we have tattva and we have measurements as well, and we say that even if the purpose is correct, and but sometimes people, even in our own movement, they take something that we consider a detail and make it into a principle.
Yes.
Even though they do want to achieve the same goal, and they do follow the philosophy,
yes,
they take what the founder Acharya says, and they claim that that's how we should proceed, and some other group claim that the other way we should proceed, and some say it's a detail, some say it's a principle.
But you have to be able to define what is a principle, so they'd have to show how it is a principle. But then
spreading Krishna consciousness is a principle.
Spreading Krishna consciousness, but, and how do you define spreading?
People become start practicing devotional service.
And how do you define practice?
Changing.
And what is the and what is the, how does this chanting, how is it practiced?
Meaning by chanting?
It means do we use beads or do we just
yes.
do it within our mind?
No,
because
we use beads.
We use beads. Okay. And so then now how, okay, we're chanting. Now outside of that means now is the conditioned soul affected by the environment they're in? And so if the environment is designed in such a way that it's favorable for this chanting, would that be an improvement?
Yes.
So therefore, then what does Prabhupada and the Acharyas and scriptures recommend for the lifestyle that they're, that one would follow that would naturally support, though it's not the primary, but it's naturally support this chanting? Right? And then now you want to get everybody to chant. Now that you as an individual are whoever you see, whoever you meet, you are telling them about Krishna, right? Right? So now, if we do that in a group effort, will we not get a broader result or a greater result? Because everybody is able to do that preaching in different areas to different people. So now to do that, does it not require organization and facility and money? So how will that be gained in line with what the Acharyas say? You understand? So in other words, it's taking that they may focus the most on the chanting, which is fine, but they have to understand that these other things without them, then there's a good chance they wouldn't be doing so much chanting. You know, like that. So these things of being able to see Krishna in everything, then even though you're going to work, you can still be Krishna conscious, even though you can't sit there with your beads and chant. You know, unless you're good at, you know, typing with just one finger or something. You know, so, you know, and have to answer the question every time, oh, what happened to your hand? Yeah, so. Okay. Does that make sense? So in other words, it's the same thing. Take what they're taking, just take it all the way up and see how far it goes. And if it keeps going and gets all nice answers, then that's good. Then you just have to widen it. But much of the time you see it comes up to a point and then it starts to fall apart. They'll say they're doing what Prabhupada's recommending. But as you go up, you have to see, actually, is it? You know. And then, okay, it is, but then is there a more ideal form? And can that ideal form be obtained at this point? If it can, why wouldn't you? If it can't, then you continue as you're doing. So, yeah.
And the continuation of that, some preachers say that because the society, we say that we are brahminical by ashram, but people misunderstand that and think that we all have to become Brahmins. And this might be a stumbling block to those who don't see themselves as Brahmins and they feel they don't have enough space in this movement. Not enough, they just don't have their place in it.
But now, if Brahmana means understanding Brahman, and since Brahman is all pervading, that's a good amount of space. You know, that's a real lot of space. And if you take it down to just your particular senses and what specific art they can do, that's very narrow. So actually, they're confining themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I'm just saying these are the things, because they'll think in one way, by taking this you just turn it around, and then they start to, you know, because they get an idea, yeah, we're being constricted by that, because that's always the mentality is, no, we want freedom, we want this and that. No, they don't. They just want to be able to do what they do. They don't want to do beyond that. But they want others to let them to do. That's the first stage. The second stage is once they can do, why wouldn't everybody else? Because if they're doing something different, then is what they're doing better or what I'm doing better? And because I like what I'm doing, I want that to be better, therefore they shouldn't do something different. So they'll be more constrictive than the Brahminical approach. Always. Guaranteed. Like that. So that's the whole point, is that the farther down you go, the more constrictive they are. Okay. Does that make sense? You know, the despotic king, he has himself and some men that make your life miserable. But that's the limit of it. But when you go down to the more, it's about the people, they have a much bigger governance, so there's much more people to give you trouble. You know what I'm saying? And the other guys, is because they're more practical, they just come in, and as long as they see it's practical control, they will. And when they don't want to get into too much detail. But when you're dealing with bureaucracies, they have nothing to do but detail. So even detail is not important, they'll come and harass you about. You know? Does that make sense? You know, you can't hand it in your description on the wrong size of paper. You know, you used, you know, A4 instead of legal, you know, or stuff like that. Or, you know, you used glossy instead of matte, or matte instead of glossy, or, you know, this weight instead of that weight. And, you know, they'll just go on and on. There is no such thing as, when you get to that, there is no such thing. You know, it's like locally, you know, getting your, what do you call it? any of these things. It's just, whatever you do, it's not right. Even though the central government will say, this is how it's done, they'll say, no. I've even seen them. Central government says this. No, that's not how it's done. Because 50 years ago, it wasn't done like that. But the central government, from seeing that this doesn't work very properly, changed it. But they're not about to change, because this is how we've always done it. This is the thing that I know. And so, yeah, it's just like that. And you go from door to door, and they'll each have a different opinion. So that's the problem, is that as you go down, even though it's considered the bureaucratic is professed by the more liberal, but actually it's more constricting when it's fully applied. Does that make sense? That's the problem, is it's material, you're always going to get trouble. So the only thing that can broaden it actually is God consciousness. Otherwise it just shifts its narrowness from one side to the other. Because it's different from that. Oh, it's more broad. No, it's not. It's just different. You know, it's like, you know, it's like that. What do you call it? That in Rome, I think it is. There's a place where you can go up and drive. It's like, I think it's a cul-de-sac. You go up to, and old houses, been there for a long time. You know, stone and all that. And there's a door there to go into one of the properties. And I guess the property, how it is, it's such that, you know, they must have lots of grounds and all that, and they're on a hill. And so you can go up to that door and look through the keyhole, And I think when you look through the keyhole, then you see St. Peter's, like, perfectly centered on it. Like that. So it's one of the tourist attractions in Rome, looking through that keyhole. But you can't see Paul's or, you know that pizza place that you want to go to. Not that you only sees that one thing. So that's the thing, is they have keyhole vision. They can only see one thing, but because it's different from someone else, then it's then they'll say it's better or it's different. So that's always going to be there. So the point is that everybody does their part. Now, why wouldn't you want to do is because they don't want to be in the hierarchy. As Brahminical, then everybody's on the same platform as the soul. They're always trying to connect everything to Krishna. But when you get into occupational, then you're getting into mechanics. And one aspect of mechanics is more important than the other. If you don't know the concept and how it connects to the Veda and to the Lord, then all your mechanics is useless. Therefore, the Brahminical is better. If you don't have a safe environment in which everybody can therefore perform their religious duties, then you can't function. Right? So therefore the Kshatriyas are the next down from that. Now, if you don't have material facility and all that for performing your religious duties, then how do you perform them? Therefore economics is next. And then after that, then you require the particular knowledge and skill to do it. So there's a hierarchy. No one wants to be placed in the hierarchy. Everyone wants to be on the top. They all say, in other words, I'm not a Brahmin, but I want to be on the top. So I want to be on the top so I can do whatever I want. Rather than whatever I want to do doesn't place me on the top, it places me down a few pegs. Like that. So that's the whole thing. It's not about really philosophy. It's about their own identity and position. So that then creates insecurities and that. So it's not that, the Vedic system doesn't accommodate. It's that it's the only system that accommodates. Like that. And so therefore, yes, you can function on that level. You don't want to be so strict about things. You don't want to be so functioning like that. But that means then it's a lower level. You accept that, you can be humble. If you're humble, you'll advance. But if you want to take something that's wrong and be proud of it and be able to be recognized and respected for your wrong position, then that's not humble and it's not progressive. So on no way can you advance. So what's the advantage if you say, I want to be a devotee and develop love for Krishna? So what's the problem? We see the acharyas and the great personalities whenever they're offering prayers to the Lord. One of the parts of the prayers is just how unqualified they are and how non-special they are. Even though there's great kings and brahmins and sages and munis and all that. But they all are saying that. But here we want to, be proud of our position. Like Baba said, the pauper is proud of his penny. And then how is that progressive? So the point is, yes, you do the best you can and surrender to Krishna. And so then from there it'll progress. But if it's a matter we want to be proud and I can do whatever I want and you're trying to always prove yourself, then you're going to be always proving yourself rather than trying to please Krishna. And so how is that going to be an advantage in Krishna consciousness? Is that okay?
Then we say that among the devotee circle, one safe when there is argument, one of the safe way is to try to clarify the intent.
Yes, clarify the intent and also clarify their actual definitions, because sometimes, like I mentioned, it was a popular thing I remember back in the 70s is that in the evening you have some rounds to do. So you're chanting on the veranda, log building, lotus building, wherever it happened to be. And then, because other brahmacharis are also doing the same thing. And then something, so then you start hanging out, you get into a conversation. Yes. 3 hours later, in this argument, you find out that you're both saying exactly the same thing. You just had a different definition for the words. Like that. Or the same thing you were describing, but you just use different words to describe it. So whatever it was. So either your measurement was different or your definition was different. And so you spent hours arguing over this until finally, after, you know, 3 hours, you know, which seemed to be the average amount of time that it took, then you understood that you're both seeing exactly the same thing. And so now you're satisfied, and you know, and it's 11 o'clock and it's time to go to bed. You know?
Some
rounds left. Yeah. Still, you have some rounds left, but at least, yeah. But now you have the enthusiasm. You're awake now. So now you can chant. Before that, you were falling asleep. So.
Now we can go
ahead. Yeah. Now we can. Yeah. So. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:84-19. The Vedas are your spotless heart. And through them one can perceive, by means of austerity, study, and self-control, the manifest, the unmanifest, and the pure existence transcendental to both. Yes, so by the Veda, through the method that Krishna gives, because if it's Krishna's heart, then it has to be through a process that's dear to Krishna. That's what the Vedas describe. Being his heart, they describe his heart. So it's how Krishna likes things done. Then you can understand the manifest of the material world, the unmanifest, what's Brahman, you know, and beyond, and then what's the transcendental existence to both, means the spiritual world. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Like that. Sutra 215, Purva Paksha. In the Chandogya Upanishad is the following passage, fire thought. Let me become many, and the waters thought, let us become many. Now, it would appear here the waters were already many and wanted to become more many. And in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad is this passage, the breaths quarreled over who was the best among ourselves. So that means the air, because there's, you know, so many varieties of vayu. These impossible statements are as plausible as saying,
no, they went to the demigod.
Sorry? Oh. They went to the demigod Brahma and asked, who is the best among us? Okay. These impossible statements are as plausible as saying, the barren woman's son is very splendid. Right? So that's the problem, is because they don't understand it. They take it as ununderstandable. Because they have faith in their own intelligence that if I can't understand it, it's not there. We have to always be careful of that. So the point is no, it's the Veda. There's beyond what I know. So then by practicing what the Veda says, in a line with what the Acharyas say, then we can understand it. Because it's revealed knowledge. It's not that, okay, means that's the nice thing about the Veda. You can, everything's there. But unless it's revealed, you won't understand it. Right? And so only areas that you can make trouble with by not understanding it, then those are kept more, you know, out of the way. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yes.
It's like I just read something the Bhagavatam Brahma said, one may have a desire to engage in devotional service, but unless it's sanctioned by the Lord,
it won't work, yeah.
You can't do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing, is you want to do devotional service, so if you approach the spiritual master, you've approached the bona fide devotees, and then in that proper attitude, then you can do, then the Lord being pleased with that, it happens. So it's not that because I want it, it happens. Because otherwise that's karma. And then bhakti's not independent. Yes. But it's that it's independent. And whether, just because you did activities seemingly of devotion doesn't mean that they'll have their effect. It's because the Lord's pleased, that's why it has this effect. But that doesn't mean that if you follow the process, bona fide process, heard from the bona fide authorities, that it won't work. But we always have to remember the working principle. Why give this definition? Because the working principle is the Lord, not us. Otherwise, it's karma, right? Mm-hmm. Karma Mimamsa says, I performed the devotional service, therefore it was bhakti. That's what Karma Mimamsa says. But no, it's I performed the devotional activities under authority, and Krishna being pleased with that, therefore he gave us bhakti. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So all these fine points are just so that we don't become proud, so we always remember our position as servant of the Lord. Otherwise, the tendency is we overemphasize as much as you were saying, and then we get into all these other things. Because then it's like it's about, you know, like you said, about chanting Hare Krishna. Yes, that's our main thing we're trying, but the Sankirtan mission means it's a broad preaching effort that arranges that everybody from all walks of life can be involved in the chanting process. So we have to accept all of that as the complete mission. Otherwise, some will emphasize one thing and not the other. You know, it's like theirs, that's the holy name, the chanting. Someone else will emphasize book distribution, that's the only thing. But somehow or another, it's amazing. These book distributors very much appreciate coming back to a temple, you know, seeing the deities taking part in the kirtan and the program, taking nice prasad, actually getting to take a proper bath, you know, stuff like that. But at the same time, as all this is second class compared to being out preaching. But if that's there, why come back to the temple? Stay on the road. Right? So that's the whole point. It's part of the overall picture. Right? Does that make sense? And then someone else will take, it's Varnashram. Without Varnashram, you won't have the thing. You won't have community. And if community is not there, people, when they get emotionally disturbed, they can't chant. So unless there's Varnashram to keep the peace in the community, people won't be able to chant. You understand? So people can take any of the aspects and overemphasize, and they're all, in one sense, correct, but at the same time, they're correct as part of the Sankirtan mission. So all of them have to be accepted. The deity worship, the chanting, the preaching, the book distribution, the management, the money, you know, the general work, everything has to be accepted. Because if it's not, it's not complete. Right? And then everybody, according to their nature, does. So someone who has that nature to do the book distribution or to preach in a particular way or manage or collect, they should do that. But just because it's best for them doesn't mean that's the best for everybody else. That's the meaning of, that's what Prabhupada mentioned as a proper leader in the movement could do, is that they can, they're engaged in Krishna consciousness, they can enthuse others in Krishna consciousness, and they engage them according to their nature, means they understand Varnashram. So they understand how devotional process, how is the main process, how Varnashram supports as, you know, the material, it means the material skills that are engaged to maintain, you know, for expressing Krishna consciousness. And then, you know, as the secondary aspects are indirect. So this combination of direct and indirect, they understand this, the details of both and their connection. Then you can properly engage someone. That's Prabhupada gives as the, you know, the opening when he talks about what is the proper manager or leader. This is how he opens it. Then more detail is after that. Because if you don't understand this, then how will you, you know, square peg and round hole, everybody knows that does not work. Of course, if you say as you take a hammer and bang it in, and then it still doesn't work, now what's the problem? The square peg is not submissive. Right? But it's not. The point is why isn't it being put into a square hole? Then it goes very nicely. So, who lacks qualification here? Not the square peg. Not the hammer. Not the round hole. Right?
Krishna.
It's the guy in between. In other words, us. Yeah. So that's the whole thing, is that we have to see that. So, because they can't understand it doesn't mean that it's not there. That's the thing. It doesn't make sense. Oh, you know, I think this or that or... That doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. It's what do the acharyas say? What does the scriptures say? How do the great personalities practice it? That's what we have to say. See. Just because I don't understand it doesn't mean that it's not viable. So the same way here is they say... They can't understand this, but it's already been explained in the Chandogya Upanishad what this is. All these things. You know, how the Lord is there, and how He is the poesy. He is fire, He is water, He is air. And so, therefore, then, that's how it goes. And so, what is done for what in connection with the Lord and how it pleases the Lord, that's the best. You know, it's just like saying, okay, what's the best kitchen utensil, the absolute best, it's the perfection, everything else is second class compared to that, what would it be?
But
the pot, but then without the fire, or if you have the pot and no spoon, And then what are you going to put in the pot? You know, whole potatoes and cauliflowers without the knife? So that's the thing, is each one has its perfection in there. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. You know, even if you say no, it's the fire. But how are you going to cook something on the fire unless you have some utensils? Because you can't hold it with your fingers. You know? Does that make sense? You know?
We use the Sanatan Goswami method, you know. Throw some balls inside the fire.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's there. That's coming close to that. But at the same time, is how do you get them out?
When the fire fades away, then.
But with your fingers, or you'll be more enthusiastic and get in there with a stick to get them out of the... Yes, but then that means it's a utensil. So that's the thing, is that they all go together. And so you could say this is more direct, more simple, it's something you can do anywhere, so it has a more of a universal thing. While your, you know, your five-star kitchen may be very hard to move around unless you have a mobile home that's just a kitchen. Yeah, so...
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanati.
It's sutra, sir. What are the sutras?
Vedanta Sutra. Vedanta Sutra.
Brahma Sutra is different?
No, same. It's just a different name of the same thing. Brahma Sutras and Vedanta Sutras are the same.
I just came to have a darshan.
Oh, okay. I heard. Thank you.
Yesterday.
So you're here from Bombay?
Yeah.
And then you'll stay here for some time.
I'm going there, but Gurukul will take me for
some. Oh, okay, you're going there today.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Every day I'm going.
Oh, every day you're going.
Yesterday I told I want to have a darshan.
Oh, okay, very
so
good.
I came.
Okay,
6:30 regularly. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, Lord.
Wonderful year.
Oh, okay, yeah. Oh, it's fine. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So now, you'll be here because you'll have another class, Bhagavatam, or you have
another class. I need a little muscle.
Oh, okay, cool.
And a day.
Okay, very good.